A very good afternoon to all. I mean, yes, I think everyone is awake now. We've done a very good job. Thank you so much. First of all, thank you so much to the organizers, Ali Salman and Tasneem Idris, for, you know, inviting me again for this conference. It's always an honor to come and represent India here. I'm coming from a country which is not a Muslim majority, but it has the largest Muslim minority in the world. So I'm happy to be here, but at the same time, you can see my topic, which is locating Indian Muslim women voices in Indian democracy. So when I was working on this paper, generally I have talked about hijab and its politicization in the last conference, and I talked about the structural violence that has been, you know, embedded by the state. Right now I thought, why not look for more encouragement that the women has been representing themselves in the public sphere. Why not look at those perspectives? Why not explore those perspectives? But, you know, I don't know whether it's how I can define a personal anecdote that has happened just exactly before coming to this presentation. As we all know the situation which in India, and Professor Saeed has very clearly put out the situation which has been happening right now. I was reverted my permission for attending this conference just because I'm going and representing a religious identity which was not according to the secular aspect of our university. So that took me a setback just exactly before the presentation, and I just relook about that, what exactly is happening and how as an individual I am asserting my voices and trying to, you know, say that how I can assert and say, don't, this is my right. Attending a conference, speaking about what I think is something I need to focus on. So similarly, my presentation is all about how Indian Muslim women has been locating their presence in the public sphere for quite some time. But the level of the visibility they have has always been somehow diminished in some sphere or the other. Can you see the, you know, this was a very famous portrait that came out last year in January 2022 when the hijab controversy actually triggered. So this was Muslim women who was wearing a black burqa. She was trying to reach her college. It's a government college. In her two-wheeler, so a group of right-wing wearing saffron intimidated the girl by chanting Jai Shri Ram and not letting her enter the college. The way she reacted was with Allahu Akbar. This is not something which was taken. It was showcasing her stand with assertion and resistance. This is the term Allahu Akbar just instantly came and became the symbol of resistance and went viral throughout media. Mainstream media or social media. So eventually her image became the symbol of resistance and voice against the harassment, discrimination that the Muslim women actually face in her day-to-day life. So in this vein, a multitude of occurrence has also occurred before and after since independence, and Muslim women demonstrating their presence, asserting their agencies, and challenging discriminatory practices using diverse strategies were contingent upon the specific time and space context that were unfolded. That was very clearly evident at the time of CAA, at the time of NRC, at the time of Shah Bano case in 1986. It was evident at Triple Talaq Act and hijab controversy. So there were so many times when the women has presented and asserted. So the focus of my paper was the main objective is to understand and investigate how they are experiencing or producing their democratic rights in the public sphere. The main purpose of my paper was to understand how the discourse on marginality and capability engagement of Indian Muslim women has been experiencing their agencies in their day-to-day life. At the same time, to what extent the space of Muslim women have in practicing their right despite of an exclusionary state politics. So when I was going through and understanding the different aspects, these are the few questions that came to mind. Are the women conscious of their sovereign rights? Do they know what they are doing? Do they know how, to what extent they are there in the public spheres? Are they aware that what are the means through which they can assert their rights? So these are the questions, how Indian women are conscious of their sovereign rights within the public sphere, how they recognize and assert their citizenship right despite of rooted exclusionary policies. What are the access to public spaces of for women is liberating, but at the same time exploitative. Okay. Can I just have the microphone? The previous slide only. So how the access to the public spaces for the women is liberating, but at the same time exploitative and space. And oppressive. According to that, the dress norms, because that became a something, an identity. Especially in today's context, if someone who is wearing hijab in the public space, they are clearly asserted as a Muslim identity. And the perceptions of a person become completely changes, especially if you are in a public space, if you're in a bus, if you're in a, if you're approaching for an employment. So these are the norms that has been changing in the public space. What exactly are the dreams and aspirations of these young women who are coming out and expressing their citizenship rights? How do they think? What are the things that are coming into their mind? So these are the things that despite of their social political, because Indian Muslim women are the margins within the margins. They are one who has been subalterns within the minority communities. So using this Pivakian subaltern discourse, I try to see that not only look at what they are doing, just try to explore their experiences so that we can know what kind of narrations, what kind of discourse they are aspiring to develop. So that is something, what was the focus and the ideas that came while working on all these structural violences that has been embedded by the states, the suppression that has been done. There was a very famous Sulideel and Bullyby app that was an online attack on these Muslim women. So despite of all these things, the women has been consistently coming out in the public spaces and what make them conscious. For this, I have used to theorize into a different aspects. I use the idea of Habermas, in which he has talked about the realm of a social life. That is something approaching public opinion that can be formed and in which the access is guaranteed to all citizens. When we talk about Habermas, Habermas says that where all the individuals are gathered, they discuss the matter into a common interest in an unrestricted fashion. So it can... However, he said that it is not to be acting on a behalf of a business or a private interest, but an individual who is dealing with a common matter of general interest. In that way, can you change the... So in that context, Nancy Fraser became very significant when she said that there has to be a subaltern counter-politics, that are parallel discursive arenas where members of subordinated social groups invent, circulate, counter discourse, or formulate oppositional interpretation of their identities, interests, and needs. So when we talk about Habermas' understanding, this is mostly focusing on a communicative interaction that gives them a chance to reason and come together and assert their ideas into a consensual form. Two main aspects which he has focused on is mostly the work and the interactions. And we try to see from a perspective of Indian Muslim women that has been quite evident when they are in terms of work, where they have seen different mode of actions which was based on their efficient means. The means which I'm going to discuss, the different means that they have used throughout the time, and what are the means and how they have asserted and formed in strategic actions. Besides that, there has been a communicative actions which actually behave or mold their behavior into a consensual norms. Protest, dissent, representation became one of those. So despite of those, dealing with those aspects of public spheres, the discourse on marginality became significantly important, because as we see, the Muslim minorities are someone who has been discriminated despite of having a secular nation. But to what state it has been facilitated, how they have realized they do have an equal citizenship. There has been a lot of discriminations which has been happening over the period of time, but the level of realization they have developed, something that, you know, gave a very nuanced understanding of their right, of their conception of citizenship. Besides that, when we try to reformulate this idea of conception of citizenships, it is to recognize where the citizenship speaks, is to encounter between state and society. how the women has been practicing their citizenship rights became very important in the position of their experiences and in the position within the social. So in this process of becoming, one of the most important aspect was that to be a citizenship is to be a social before it is a civic and political. How you work in a social construction, what is the space of exclusion or inclusion through the social progress, and how you are becoming through the social before you become a, before you enter into a social and political realm. So it is not how you are political, how you are becoming political through the social construction, that became something very significant, and that exactly what has happened in the whole descent process when the women, Muslim women started representing themselves in a public sphere. So when we conceptualize citizenship that is produced through the social draws attention to the limit of the state in delivering right, where the dominant construction of citizenships may be contested and overturned by the political actors seeking justice. So there has been multiple events that there has been, you know, talked about how they can form a conventional model of citizenship. But despite of having a compromised citizenship, the Indian Muslim women and the minorities have always found a way to assert their opinion through an alternative spaces. What that alternative spaces have, that what made them realize those alternative spaces, what made them get out of the house, what made them, you know, to present into the public space and say, no, this is not right, this is what it is. So I again use this Pivakian context in trying to locate their voice, that yes, it is okay to talk about them, because there has been some work which has been done for the Muslim women, but the discourse which needs to come out has still needs to be, you know, explored, and that could only happen when we develop a narrative when we form a space for that. So in Spivakian subaltern, she has also problematized this prevailing discursive contingent, often stigmatized and subjugated identity. It is defined not by the altruistic or divine intervention, but is indicated by the combination of events or social, political, economic process coming together to throw the light upon the system of subjugation and set the and enabling people to see it is unjust. One of the important thing is, if we try to understand the concept of Indian Muslim women, they are not just disadvantaged, they are triply disadvantaged. They have been a minority, they are born as a woman, and they are born as someone who is coming from a minority religion. So this kind of subjugation has been causing them a lot of gender inequalities and different positions. So the different, I won't be going into the historical development of the women marginality that has been happened throughout the time, because we have seen that the level of education, if you go and explore the Satchar Committee, it has said that the women has been undermined, the lack of education is there, their unemployment is there, and they have their own reasons for that. There's a religious limitations, not just religious limitations, but also within the proximity, within the social and political proximity. There's always a question of social sovereign rights. There's a language of inherent violence, which we always overlook, why this language is so inhibited. Ki, you should not do this. This is not for good girls. There has to be a character assassination. Something that has been so molded in a language, which get imbibed and change our whole personalities as such. Intersectional identities and homogenization of Indian Muslim women was also one of the biggest factors, because it is not true. There are different class, there are different culture, there are different age, there are different traditions. So considering as an homogeneity of an Indian Muslim women became an important issue. So based on that, I try to point out that different engagement that has happened within Indian Muslim women are these, firstly the protest, dissent, representation of Indian Muslim women, then the social media and feminist digital engagement. I'll just try to go one by one. Indian Muslim women led organizations. There are many organizations who have been existing and who are emerging that is actually working for the Muslim women. Then there is a literary, academic, intellectual engagement along with the political and electoral engagement. When we talk, you can see this is the protest, dissent and representation. These three pictures are from different protests. That is from Uttarakhand, which recently happened, and where the women came out because the fear of their house being demolished. This is the Shaheen Bagh, the upper one is the Shaheen Bagh protest, and the lower one is the hijab protest.
So why the women who has been coming out, and this is not just recently that has happened, even at the Shah Bano case, when this right to protection on right to divorce act was passed, women came out on the streets to assert that this is not something which is for their development. It is not an equal legal loss. So one has to work and, you know, rephrase or need to relook at this loss. So the presence of women itself on the streets shows that they are conscious enough of their rights and they know how to assert their political rights. Triple Talaq Act, when Triple Talaq Act was passed, it was the most common narrative that actually came out that this act is a savior for Indian Muslim women. This act will help Indian Muslim women to, you know, to not get impacted or victimized by this triple or instant talaq. But at least women were conscious enough to understand that what exactly the law is, how it has been designed, what are the repercussions and how it can, you know, impact them in future. So they also came out, they also protested. These protests has been happening in different part of the world, different part of the India. It's not just one place. So large number of women came out, registered their dissent, represented their presence and make it visible that this is something they are not going to accept easily. I'm not going into the outcome or the consequences. Right now I'm just locating that how women are using different public spaces in order to register their voices, and that shows that the potential they have in registering the voices despite of being so marginalized in that context. Okay. Then Shaheen Bagh protest, that was a very known protest which has happened. One of the most interesting part of this Shaheen Bagh protest was, it was, first of all, there were more than 400 protests that happened, and the Shaheen Bagh protest was led by women. So the most thing that excites this in this protest was that how Muslim women were conscious and that considered the motivations for their everyday life that can lead them act collectively in the pursuit of goals and perceive as better achieved collectively than individual. So not only they came out of the house, not only they registered, they also developed a sense of community among themselves. That's what where the Habermas was talking about the consensual norms. And they emerged in a shared routine, bind them together within their religious identities and the neighborhood bonds. There was a physical proximity that brought them together. There was a shared experience that brought them together. And they think facilitate bonds and networks for their collective actions. So at times songs, poetries, and other communal rituals played that also develop a sense of solidarity among themselves. So can you just change the... this was again the hijab controversies which happened last year. I won't be going to the detail because of the paucity of time. This is one mode of protest that has happened. Similarly, social media. Next slide, please. Social media. If you go and type social media, you will find a lot of women who has been registering their voices and countering the narratives which has been given to them. That shows they have this level of consciousness. Of course, there has been some limitations. There has been some problems. There has been a lot of problems, actually. There has been a lot of backlashes, actually. But the way they have used this digital engagement is something that needs to be noted and pointed that they do have the capacity. Next slide, please. Next. Muslim women led organizations. So there are different organizations who are basically working. If you see that Muslim Women Right Network, Bharati Mahila, Muslim Mahila Andolan, which means Indian Muslim Women Revolution, Muslim Women Forum, India Rising Beyond the Ceiling, these organizations are doing in order to, to take the women out, to inspire the women and to work for the rights, social, economical, political rights of the women. Secondly, there has been many emerging Muslim-led organizations like led by Foundation, Muslim Women Research Network, Muslim Women Study Circle, led by foundations basically work on improvising the employment opportunities for the Muslim women because they can go into the employment opportunities, go into the public space and register their voice. There has been a huge hiring bias. There is a huge study that has came out which shows there has been a hiring bias between a Muslim and a non-Muslim women. So when we try to talk about the Indian Muslim women and try to locate the idea of through Spivakian point, that it shows that we need to recognize their sovereign rights. To what extent it has been exercising? Do they have the political space? Do they have the political space to voice and represent their community? Are they forming their own political spatial states? Or are they inclusive of the electoral participations or their employment of economic independence and establishing their theological origins rather than basing on the state-formed religions? So these are the aspects which has been discussed. Lastly, when we talk about, basically this was an idea that actually came up, which actually emerged with that there has been some sort of registration of women or visibility of women in the public spaces. So we thought, like, let's do a study. This is something which we are focusing on doing in the future, like taking a narration. So one of the most important point which I need to point out here is, like, we know the presence of women has been there, but what is the narration, what is the discourse they think from the public perspective is need to be registered as well. It should not be something we are telling on their behalf. They need to come out. How to do that? How to proceed with that? How to make them, come on the on a public space and make their narration visible to the world? So this was a small pilot study which we are planning to do, in which we used basically the subjective approach and narration discourse, where we can, you know, register the narratives of this women and try to see from different methods. So we have this observation and survey methods, and this has been based on two different phases. First phase has been Delhi, Lucknow, Hyderabad, and the second phase is Mumbai, Bangalore, and Kolkata. So this is basically what is the plan that has been happening. Despite of all these things, there are the limitations which I would like to, you know, mention few of the limitations as my conclusion, because we know that there are a lot of limitations. We know what the country has been going through. We know what kind of, you know, things has been happening in our day-to-day lives. So these are the few limitations that I have pointed out. Limited individual narrations is there. There's unexplored impact on individual socioeconomic lives. There's a suspected nationalism. We always have to prove ourselves more than the normal Indian nationals. Stereotyping and shaping in Muslim women. If you are wearing a hijab, oh, you must be suppressed, you must be oppressed, you must be, you know, going through some bad times, or your parents must be very strict. So these kind of stereotyping and shaming has been so evident and embedded in our day-to-day life. The lack of legitimized safe space. Even if we have a safe space, like Shaheen Bagh was a safe space, but the level of harassment that has happened that time, the level of crackdown that has happened that time, so it's something which needs to be noted, and you know, women should be given that kind, that space should be legitimized. Obviously, Shaheen Bagh protest was more of a political strategy, but still, it shows that women came out and, you know, spoke about their rights. They were at least conscious enough to practice their sovereign rights. Limited networking opportunities, monopolizing structural gender-based violence, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, if you try to see the, you know, Suli by app or Suli deals, Bully by app and Suli deals, there has been women who has been impacted by this. So I think I'll end this presentation here, but I understand there has been a lot of, you know, comments, there'll be a lot of clarifications that needed, because we are talking, dealing something which has been fresh and that came out for with the purpose of enabling the women, rather than talking about, yes, there has been structural violence, but how we can improvise their lives, we can focus more on that. Also, I'll be happy if there is more, intervention, if there is more feedback, because that will help me improvise my work in that context. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Azima.